This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 7th of October, 1955. The title of this lecture is Base Time and Time Continuum. This lecture is 57 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
Okay. In view of what we have been covering in relationship to time, you should then understand the mechanism by which individuals become, quote, stuck on the track, unquote, or, quote, stuck on the auditor, unquote, or stuck in a house or anywhere else. You should understand stick. Stick is first the consideration that one can get stuck. And then, mechanically, the consideration of trying to stop time or start time with failures in either instance. When you try to start time or stop time and fail and consider that you have failed, you're liable to get a stick. And when you have mechanically shifted from one base time to another base time without disconnecting from the first base time, you don't get just a stick. You get a solid object. The ball up of the bank, the remarkable state in which you find some reactive banks, is due to this characteristic, that one has shifted from one base time to another base time without disconnecting from the first base time. That's about all there is to it. This leaves one then trying to judge a new time continuum by an old one. And it gives one what is known as a feeling of unreality. Now, why does it give one a feeling of unreality? Just guess. How could you look at a particle that was traveling at 10 miles an hour when you knew, as how could you look at it clearly, when you knew that it should be traveling at 1,000 miles an hour? You'd be trying to push it up toward 1,000 miles an hour, wouldn't you? And therefore, the particle wouldn't be real to you because you wouldn't be in very good agreement with it. You would say, there's a particle traveling at 10 miles an hour that should be going 1,000 miles an hour, and therefore, it is not quite real. Because it isn't doing what I think it should do. Therefore, you would try to stop it. Now, let's say the reverse had occurred. You had just left a much, much slower base time, and we're now in a much faster base time. You looked at the particle, and it was traveling 1,000 miles an hour, and you knew very well that it ought to be going 10 miles an hour. And you would say, oh, no, 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 no. And out of these two computations, we get that thing, that mechanical thing, also by consideration. And mechanically, by trying to speed up or slow down the particles in our vicinity, since they are not in agreement with the time continuum with which we are still in agreement. And above all this, we get, of course, an enormous insistence on the part of the individual that a time continuum be steady. And we get this because he knows he can't unmock, he thinks, a particle which he cannot trace. And this is the mechanism called tolerance. tolerance, quite important. Because from this comes, I don't think this is unimportant, this is very important, from this comes the intolerance for confusion. Do you realize that a confusion could take place as easily when one thought the particle should move fast and it was moving slow, as when the particle is moving slow when it should be moving fast, or vice versa? A particle going too fast, a particle going too slow, in either case could create a confusion. Now, I'll give you some idea of how one could go about this. He has just mailed a letter to Paris. And he knows the letter should be there next Tuesday. Because he air-mailed it. And he knows very well that it is going to get there next Tuesday. And he is very confident because the event to which it relates will only take place on Wednesday. And he hears Wednesday morning that it is not there. Wednesday morning, and it is not there. What's he going to do? Well, actually, the airmail sticker fell off of it, and it went by boat and train. And if you know the French train systems, and Wednesday and Thursday, there's a tremendous amount of confusion. All particles are trying to move forward except one particle, and it was expected to move forward at a different rate of speed, and it's moving too slow. And if it moves too slow, we easily lose it. You could say that nothing is ever lost. Things simply go so slow, they pass out of sight, or go so fast, they pass out of sight. And either one of these actions creates a confusion. Now, these are the mechanics of confusion. If you wanted to throw an entire organization, appetite over tin cup, all you'd have to do was throw randomity into the speed of transmission of its mail. Move some particles too fast, and move some particles too slow. Now let's take the submission of all checks in payment of bills. And let's airmail those and put post express or special delivery on them. And now let's take all bank deposits and hand them to whoever happens along and mention that if they're ever by the bank, they might drop in, if they think of it. What's going to happen at once? You're going to create at once a financial chaos, because the checks are going to arrive and get cashed, and the bank account's going to be overdrawn. See, now that's a very graphic example of how you can go about this. All right. The trouble here, then, is that the particles are not in agreement, each with another, and there's evidently two base times running at the same time. Similarly, somebody who wants to get the show on the road starts running at speed A and finds the road, other people, running at speed B. He will inevitably create some confusion. Inevitably. But let's suppose that there's a fellow in their midst who doesn't want to get a show on the road very much, and he is traveling at speed C when he should be traveling at speed B. And things are dependent on him. Then in his immediate vicinity, again, you will have a confusion. So a confusion is basically, what is the rate of change? When you can pose this question, rate of change, and say that the rate of change is therefore unknown, then you get a confusion. And it wouldn't matter whether it was too slow or too fast. We're too much in the habit of thinking all confusions stem from speed. And let me call to your attention that this is a police observation. This is a traffic cop observation. Traffic cop has the Maybe nobody ever told him this, but he really does have the responsibility of clearing the roads of traffic. He defines it differently, usually, however. He thinks his responsibility is to keep traffic moving slowly and safely. We don't know that moving traffic slowly is moving traffic safely, since an examination of accidents demonstrates that some 50% of the cars involved in accidents were moving too slowly. And they were certainly moving in disagreement with somebody else's time base. If you go along a highway, you may find some randomity occurring because someone is driving rapidly. But you will find much more commonly all kinds of interesting things occurring because somebody is moving at a slow rate of speed and traffic is stacking up behind him and trying to pass him on the curves and so forth. If you really wanted to look around, there's your accident prone. If he can just make enough people pass him on enough dangerous curves, he'll really mow him down. Whereas the speeding individual usually simply goes off the road or some such thing. He doesn't always involve other vehicles. Traffic cop does not understand these factors. They have never been stated in his textbooks. They have things in the States called traffic engineers. And the traffic engineer has as his motto the creation of the maximum amount of confusion with the maximum amount of traffic jam. You would swear that this was the case, since towns which have never had traffic troubles employ a traffic engineer, and promptly, you can't go here from there. They start putting in one-way streets. They make every other street one-way streets. And the next thing you know, places of business can't be frequented. If you get going down one of these one-way streets, there's no way out until you're out in the country. There's actually a zone in Washington, D.C., F Street, where they've even gotten down to slowing down foot traffic. They fixed up foot traffic on F Street, too, by the very ample expedient of never permitting any really important methods of transportation to come around F Street. And so you can't get a taxi cab on F Street. And you can't get the right cars on F Street. And you walk down F Street, you've got to go way down a hill, clear down to Pennsylvania Avenue, or way up north someplace, in order to find any means of transportation. Yet the principal stores of the town, the really flashy ones, are located in this area. And everyone is carrying bundles. Well, all that happens in an area like this is that the income of these stores drop to almost nothing. They're barely able to pay their rent. You get decentralized shopping. You get shopping and stores going out to areas which do permit traffic. Well, ever since they've gotten a traffic engineer in Washington, D.C., they have had more and more trouble with traffic. Now, they've actually put in underpasses under their circles and so forth. Washington, D.C. is laid out interestingly. It was laid out so that a few soldiers at a number of circles could sweep any avenue with grape. L'Enfant, the French engineer, laid it out back around 1800. And it's all on concentric circles, and the reason for this is not the harmony and beauty of the situation, since nobody in his right mind can build a building in Washington, because the buildings can't be square. They've got to be V'd in some fashion. They've got to project in other fashions and so forth. But it's a very handy thing because, you see, all you'd have to do is throw an artillery battery into one of these circles and you would be able to sweep the entire ingress toward the Capitol and the White House. That's why the British took it so easily in 1812. Well, anyway, we get off of that. The point is that it's on a defensive plan. Well, with all of these circles, traffic could not flow in an uninterrupted fashion. And if you were to pour a bit of water down a trough, you would find out there would be few ripples in the water. But if you were to put islands all up and down the trough, you would find the water would go into a considerable turbulence. And you would find out that regardless of how much water you blocked, you see, for every turbulence, you could expand the trough at that point, you'd find out that much less water would now flow through the trough. See, we divert it in various directions. We've got the same potential volume, but we don't get the velocity. And so in Washington, D.C., it was almost impossible to get from here to there because of these circles. But nevertheless, traffic did move. And then everybody got ambitious and started to undercut underpasses under these circles. Of course, this defeats the purpose of the circle. The circle now does not operate as a road barricade, but a tank coming down the line can simply go on through under complete protection of the underpasses. I'm sure that nobody consulted anybody before they did this. But the moment this occurred, Washington one-way streeted itself. They got a traffic engineer. This was too much traffic flow. After all, it's only the totality of the U.S. government clerical staff that rides up and down those streets getting to work and going home. So naturally, we'd better stop it. Actually, it might have been a move in a good direction, but nevertheless, there's a big gag in the United States is thank God we don't get all the government we pay for. We would also say, thank God we don't get all the government we've got clerks for. with the one-way street system, you can get into pockets and places in the city that you actually can't get out of easily. You know, you keep going round and round and round and round, and you say, this place looks familiar. And you go round again, and it still looks familiar. You start running down the street like F Street, and it says, no left turn, no right turn, no left turn, no right turn, no left turn, no right turn, one way, straight ahead. No left turn, no right turn. I saw a French cartoon the other day, and it's showing this, no left turn, no right turn, one way, no U-turn. One way, no left turn, no right turn, no U-turn. And then suddenly, dead end. Well, you understand that if a traffic engineer were to terrifically expedite traffic, he might have a little bit better solution, but he'd still have a different time base. But he'd have a time base closer to the intentions of the citizens. The intention of the citizen is to get into town and get out of town. That's his intention. And the traffic engineer says he'll go around about in town and that he will travel in slowly and travel out slowly. In order to handle traffic, you have to keep the streets clear of traffic. That is the solvent law. With regard to this, you've just got to keep the streets clean. You get traffic off the streets, and you have few traffic problems. If you leave the traffic on the streets, you have a great many traffic problems. All right. Let's put an awful lot of one-way streets in, which you have to go down and turn around and come up the other way, and then go down that one-way street and then turn the other way in order to get back to a place which was just around the corner from which you first started. You will see immediately that you're holding traffic on the streets longer. So therefore, you might say, a traffic engineer tailor makes a different time base than the citizen. And the citizen is therefore in a continuous rage on the subject of traffic. See how easily this is done? So anytime you wanted to take any organization, just take some part of its flow lines and make these flow on a different time base than the remainder of the agreements. And after a while, it'll move off all by itself. You'll get a disconnect entirely. I can foresee a time when automobile drivers will be dressed in a certain costume which will have no relationship whatsoever to the costumes worn by the citizens. He will probably not be a citizen. He will vote on an entirely different ticket and machine. He will eat different food. And he will not speak the same language. He will have been held on streets so long that all the forwarding of the genetic line will have to have been done in cars. I call to your attention that it's already tending in this direction. Now, this is a mechanical method of bringing about individuation. See that? It's a mechanical method of bringing about individuation. Now, if you've got one nice time base, and everybody's running on this very nicely, all you have to do is get another time base on which there are different considerations, which is still related to the first time base. And then get another time base, which is still related to the other two time bases. And we now have two individuals. We have the time base itself, the actual motion of particles, to which are related the motions of two other time bases. So we'd have two other individuals. We would not have two other individuals if both of them were completely and entirely in time base one. There was no difference of time base between individual one and individual two with relationship to time base one. Therefore, they would get along beautifully. But the second we change their time bases any and make them live on different time bases or time relationships, we then get individuation. Now, a very funny thing, but a method of creating a war, which would be absolutely optimum, would be to introduce in two different nations two different time systems, both of which nations were running on the same basic time base, you might say universal time base. That's the half-life of radium and uranium and so forth. Let's take France and form a metric time base. Let's just change the names of the things. Let's have 10 hours in a day and 100 minutes to the hour and 100 seconds to the minute. And then have Great Britain sitting here with this time base which we have. See? And sooner or later these two nations would go to war. It's obvious because they're becoming so individualized, one from the other, according to the viewpoint of the other, that they eventually become complete strangers and there's nothing but disagreement possible between them. Now that would be, sounds now as though we've made a wild statement, but it's not a wild statement. You could have all Frenchmen speaking French, everybody in Great Britain going on speaking English, and not necessarily have a war. You wouldn't guarantee one at all, because there's still communication mixed up in this, which as is the difference. You could have all Frenchmen wearing stovepipe hats and make this against the law in Great Britain, and you still would not inevitably have a war. But you inevitably would have a war. There would be no avoidance of a war if the French had a day composed of 10 hours, a week composed of 10 days, let us say, a year composed of 10 months, and they had any concourse between them at all. After a while, everybody would have the opinion, those French, they're entirely different. They're not human. There's no humanness to be found at all in France. They are animals or beasts of some sort. This is why interplanetary war so ordinarily and commonly takes place immediately after interstellar travel results, which we can find in parascientology as a pretty good example. It isn't the differences of language or anything else. Times look so strange. Times look so strange. Both planets are on the same time base, but the difference of swing of the planet itself, difference of orbit, difference of its lunar characteristics, and so forth, are wildly in disagreement one with the other. And these two things would either bring about a complete inability to communicate, or. If there was any effort to communicate at all, be war. That's why Orson Welles can throw on the radio, "Invasion from Mars," and have riot throughout the United States. Real riot. And why down in South America, when this same program translated into Spanish was played, 17 people were killed and an entire building was wrecked. See, you just would not expect this sort of violence to take place because somebody rigged up a phony invasion from Mars, you see. And yet these things did happen. Well, we'd say they're really strangers. They're a long way away, and there are lots of reasons why, and we could figure lots of reasons why. Well, the basic reason why would be the difference of swing, the difference of orbit. Well, if there's this much commotion between these two planets in the same solar system, which have at least the sun in common, what kind of a difference and what kind of a panic and commotion would ensue if we ran a program about the invaders from Alpha Centauri? Well, maybe nobody would have heard about the invaders from Alpha Centauri. Maybe it'd be a terrific difference here. Maybe it'd be so wide that there would be no cognition at all. See? Or there would be a war. But where Mars is concerned, this is evidently terror. Well, this is evidently not entirely past track, you see. It's just the cognition of different time bases. They must move, act, behave, think entirely different, so therefore they would have no agreement, so therefore the only intention they could possibly have would be to shoot us all up. And the public evidently assumes this with the greatest readiness. Well, if there's this much difference, why, the only intention they'd possibly have would be a vicious one. See, they assume the disagreement. Now, this is an aspect of relationships amongst people which has been, unlike so many of the things we deal with, which have been considered here and there, spottily or sketchily, or well, from time to time in the history of the race, this is really something that has not really been considered very much, mostly because time itself was a big mystery. And to think about it at all, one was plunged into a mystery. Because of all the things which is enwrapped with an "I don't know," time is. To have something go off this automatically, you really had to say you didn't know before you set it on automatic, you see. Then you didn't know you had it on automatic. First you said you didn't know, and then made the knowingness called time base, and then you forgot it. You not is the knowingness, and now we've got it buried twice. And you kept it to a large degree in that way. So at the same time, however, it then pinned you in the same time continuum and made you less able to change your consideration, because it is the highest echelon of aberration. So we get the most insane actions on the subject of time, and man has not much considered this time difference. He has very slightly considered this time difference as a chief factor in bringing about a disagreement. About the only thing that could even vaguely associate two time bases and prevent a great deal of rage and argument and so forth from us coming about at all would be conversation on the subject. Just as getting anything in Axiom 51, auditing is possible because postulates and communication as is messed. Messed does not as is messed. Messed cannot change messed without getting a persistence, but postulates and communication can change messed without getting persistence. And therefore we have auditing, and auditing can occur. It's the only way it can occur. So obviously we have a difficulty of communication the wider apart time bases are. Now, why? Why? Because communication itself is a two-way double horseshoe, and it depends upon a rhythmic use of these two double horseshoes to get a communication. That's why you object to comm lags. So forth. The other person is telling you, he's saying, look, I'm not running on your time base. You expect that acknowledgement now, and I'll give it to you in a half an hour. See, and you say, yeah. But that it is occurring in conversation. That it is occurring in conversation at all has a tendency to undo the damage which it does. Now let's take two universes. Can two universes coexist? And now when I say two universes, I do mean two universes. Different suns, different planets, different agreements. Can they coexist? Yes, you could have a full enough difference in the consideration of time. Not the way we make time, but just the difference of consideration of weight to have two universes exist immediately and coincidentally, one with another, without ever being in communication with each other. Which is to say, if you're in universe A, you cannot see universe B, because universe B is far enough out of time rate with universe A, just on different communication considerations, so that no interchange takes place, not even lookingness. So don't wonder once in a while if you, on changing the considerations of your preclear, all of a sudden have him walk into a wall in the middle of the room. He won't do this accidentally unless you also do this. Here's a real, real weird little thing. You say, can you get the idea of a monster's head with 18 antenna thereupon? Just pick it at random, huh? A lot of antenna, a monster's head. You get the idea of being in that head? Well, that's fine. Why don't you spot the environment of the head from within the head? Now, do you see any more monsters? Well, I get the idea you agree with that other monster. And all of a sudden, the environment brightens up, you know. Now, do you see any more monsters? Oh, you do. Well, get the idea that the second monster and the third monster are in agreement. And that you're in agreement with them. Well, I don't know whether I could be in agreement with them or not. They have these antenna, and they have very peculiar reasons and rationales. Well, now, that's all right. Just get the idea. There's something there you can agree with. Well, I don't know whether I could agree with this or not, really. Well, I could agree with the fact they've got heads. All right, that's fine. Now, what else do you think you could agree with regard to those two other monsters and the one whose head you're in? Right? Those walls will get solider and solider, and the monsters will get realer and realer and realer. And a careless observer would suppose that you were hypnotically influencing the individual and creating a universe for him. And the funny part of it is if he were very low-toned and couldn't exteriorize, and was pretty apathetic, so that when you moved his hand from A to B, it stayed at B, yeah, you could create a brand new universe for him to agree with. Which nobody else would be in. And which wouldn't exist, but it still float around as a kind of a facsimile form. But remember, the preclear that you should be working this on should be right on the ball. And this universe should be quite bright to him. His ability to agree and disagree with time streams ought to be pretty good before you do something like this. Now, where did you get the monster with the 18 antenna? Well, in view of the fact you don't have to look to know, and in view of the fact you're a smart auditor, you just kind of get the idea, that's all. Just seems natural. Such a thing might exist. You got it? Now, the funny part of it is sometimes he merely goes into a facsimile, and you haven't done a time shift from universe to universe. You've done a time shift from his current time to some past time. Now, do you want to know why space opera stays in restimulation when found in the bank, and why people do not agree that there's been space opera in the past? You want to know why these two things? Sure. Well, you should know right now. The time rate of space opera is so dizzily fast compared to the time rate of Earth living that a change from space opera to Earth living would in itself tend to stick you with the facsimiles of space opera. They run at different rates. Therefore, here on Earth, they don't as is. Now, just as a person is in a fortunate condition if he has lived all his life in one community, so is a person in a fortunate condition who has had a fairly stable time rate on his track, but only from the standpoint of facsimiles. And if you could handle these facsimiles and locations in another way, shape, or form, why, this then would be no liability at all. But an individual who lives always in Dorsetshire, and he's very familiar with the whole place, and times have gone along for a long time without anybody inventing anything very new, of course, has all of the facsimiles of that lifetime in a state of as-isness. There's no change of rates, no continuous change of rates. But somebody who has moved from there to London, to Calcutta, to South Africa, to New York, and then went for a long vacation in the South Pacific, it's liable to have a kind of a jammy bank. And why would it be a jammy bank? It's just the fact he's changed time rates. And the only thing wrong with doing that is he did not go out of agreement with the past rate before he assumed the new rate. See, that's the only liability he had. He just put letting go-ness, the letting go-ness of time on automatic, and therefore took no responsibility for the letting go-ness of time. Yet he did it, didn't he? So he's in the position of trying to make his left hand pull his right hand off of the chair, see? And he just doesn't get out of that past time stream. The reactive bank, to this degree, should then make a lot of sense to you. You should have a very, very good idea of what the reactive bank is all about and why it stays in suspension. Everything in it is that is there, here, in this environment, was a different time continuum than this environment. Got that? The change of environment as-is-es or nulls any and all facsimiles of a similar time base. Therefore, we change preclear from town A to town B, and we get some minor shift in his psychosomatic illness. We change him from town A to countryside B, and we get a marked change in illness and behavior pattern. But remember, this is a random shot. We might make him 10 times as sick. It's like the young man I found early in Dianetics who had had asthma since birth. He had a birth that was rough enough to have produced almost any quantity of asthma. And who had been taken from the time he was 3 on from Philadelphia to the Appalachian mountain resorts for his asthma. And it always gotten worse when he'd reached the Appalachian resorts and was being transferred back and forth from the town to the resorts to the town to the resorts. And the restimulator for asthma, in his particular case, was straight out of birth with a wide open window and a cold room. Clean, fresh air was the restimulator. And they never left him in the mountains long enough for the thing to as-is to any degree. In the first place, the clean, fresh air of the operating room was not evidently at the same time rate as the clean, fresh air of the mountains. There was a difference right there. And certainly, neither one were in agreement with the city. And we checked over his case history, and we found out that he would just about get well in the city, you see, just about recover, and they'd rush him off to the mountains again. If they'd simply let him go to school in town, you know, and do the various things which a boy does, he'd undoubtedly gotten rid of all this. But this tremendous concern was going on all the time, too, which was also a restimulator. But remember, it wasn't close enough to the time rate because there was a terrific amount of emergency and rush in the birth. So you see, we had birth, although it had things in common with the environment, was still running at a different time base than the environment. And so therefore, just never as is. It simply stayed in restimulation. You see, it's a rather neat trick to do everything just on the same time base. Well, the chances are that the engrams which are in sharpest restimulation are engrams which are on the totally different time base of other universes and are not this universe's engrams at all. See, this would just follow, wouldn't it? But something would have to kick them in or stir them up in some fashion. Once they'd been stirred up, one would become cognizant of the difference of their base rate. And one would go into and out of communication with them. And there's many a preclear walking around who doesn't have an engram bank who apparently has lots of engrams. A little oddity that stares at us now and then. He's just looking into another universe. And the characteristic here is that there is motion and change of pace and so forth in his engrams, which are kind of peculiar to him. You know, they look peculiar to him. They're going off at odd angles and the scenery changes, and it isn't particularly engramic. Got it? But we would mistake it for constancy of engram bank or some such thing, you see, if we really didn't know what we were looking at. We could make a total mistake on engrams. We could be trying to rub out and erase another universe. And, of course, the more you went into agreement with it, the plainer the universe would get. And we wouldn't get an erasure at all. But naturally, these would not be emergency scenes native to him. Somebody, sooner or later, would have realized that he was not racing engrams. There was something funny about the case, because the things weren't aberrative in the first place. Maybe his present time problem is the fact that he's not quite into this universe and not quite out of that one. So that one looks real unreal, and this one looks just unreal. See how you can get that situation? And the other is looks so unreal to him that he doesn't think he has any relationship to it at all, you see? It's just kind of there, but hasn't anything to do with him. And this universe could only look mediumly unreal, and he really could touch things and so forth. So your 8C and your locational processing permits an individual to work himself out on the basis of old time rates, you know, and you're showing him, look at the time rate around here, see, look at the time rate around here, you're saying to him. Now, when 8C doesn't work is when he does not do a disagreement mentally with old time rates. See, he doesn't change his mind about old time rates. He can be persuaded to do so one way or the other. He can be talked to about it. Something on the basis of how things are going on around him here and so forth, and get him to compare this to how things were going on around him in some fashion, and you're liable to get a disconnect. But more important than that, much more important than that, is to give him exercises in going out of agreement and exercises in going into agreement. But the funny part of it is because he's living in this workaday world, you don't have to pay any attention to going into agreement at all. The whole environment is rigged to get you in agreement, and no part of it is rigged really to get you out of agreement. See? So separate from works as a process. Together with does not work as a process. He's already had too much of that. Together with does not function as a process. To satisfy yourself to this degree that it is getting in disagreement with old time bases and rehabilitating the ability to consider oneself separate from old objects and so forth. Consider that one is, you understand, that this right hand doesn't come free on this chair, see? Because one doesn't consider that it's separate from the chair. You consider it separate from the chair, and it comes right off, see? All right. You should really, sometime or another, when the preclear's been mean to you or something of this sort, you should run this other process just for the devil of it. And somebody, just look it over and see what happens. You only have to run it for 10 or 15 minutes and you'll see what happens. He's just getting stucker and stucker and stucker and stucker. You say, let's find some objects around here you could identify yourself with. Let's find some things around here that are the same as other things around here. Let's find some things around here that you could go ahead and associate with. Apparently, we would be making a social being out of him. Apparently, we would be putting him into a situation here where he was just in beautiful condition, you see. After all, we're fixing him up so he'll conform to the environment, aren't we? Huh? We are. Psychoanalysis, psychology alike have this as a goal. We're fixing him up so he can conform to the environment. We're being good Joes. And we watch him sag, sag, sag. He's perfectly willing to do it, too, the chump. He begins to feel logier and logier and soggier and soggier and upsetter and upsetter and stickier and stickier, and his comm lag gets longer and longer. Now, you ought to run it sometime just to satisfy yourself as to what's going on. It seems to be common to all life that disagreement with the past time base has been put on automatic, and that agreement with the new time base is the only conscious performance. You're simply exercising a conscious performance as a conscious performance. So what? He does this all the time. He doesn't make any mistake. He says, now I see a bus. You know, now I see a sidewalk. Well, if you ask him to associate himself with the bus and associate himself with the sidewalk, you'll pretty soon butter him all over the place. But he can look at these things and see that there's a distance between himself and them, and that is the first step. See, look at those people. He's deciding to look at the people, you know, he's looking at the people. And now you say, let's look at the difference between you and these people, which you're saying, now, which one of these people are separate from you? Which one of these people are you separate from, the other side of it? And he goes, pong, 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 or these objects, or these gravestones, or something like that. You run both sides of separateness, and what do you get? You start running out the automaticity of disagreement. You understand, he's disagreeing automatically. And we must put this on knowing volition. As soon as we do this, we separate him then from all time bases. How? He didn't even have to know about them. Why would he come free of them? But when he thinks of them, after a while, having had his ability to disagree rehabilitated by this separateness process, he can look at something and he can say, well, I'm no longer associated with that, and his ability to consider and make postulates is now in good enough condition so that the automaticity of that particular thing goes. Really, you teach him to do this. Sooner or later, he'd find it out for himself. You take this poor little girl, she gets married to Joe. And Joe is a nice guy. There's nothing wrong with Joe. Slow, steady type. She came from a family of artists. But they were all very fond of her. They wish to protect her, and other mechanisms are present. And somehow or another, after 10 years of marriage, Joe has yet to get a warm breakfast or find a bed made when he comes home at night. She doesn't live there. Got it? She reactively is still living in a family of fast-moving, excitable artists. And she never left the joint. She's still interiorized into that house because she never volitionally went through the ritual of Papa, now I part from thee. I am in disagreement with thee, Papa. Never went through such a ritual at all. And she's been living with slow, plodding Joe. She could explain this in a number of ways. There isn't enough excitement. There isn't enough future. There isn't enough money in it. There isn't yap, 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 yap. See? Reasons, reasons, reasons. And none of these are the reason. There isn't any other significance in it than that her original household ran with rapidity, excitability, and with erratic time changes, which became her time base. So you could have, you could actually have a time base with erratic changes in it if it was the same pattern of erraticness. You could live with a clock that went its first half hour in 5 minutes and its second half hour in 55 minutes. You could live with a clock that did this, see? You'd say, well, that's what that thing is doing, you know. It's the basis of understanding. Well, Papa's loafing this week. And next week, Papa's putting in 23 hours a day, you see. Traveling like mad. But all this week, nobody can get into the living room at all because he's lying on the sofa. And he hasn't budged from the sofa all week long except to interrupt everybody's goings and comings by having him a cup of tea brought. Got the idea? And she can live with that time base. Don't think of a time base as tock, 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 tock. Just think of it as a consistency of motion, action, and consideration. And you can be awfully inconsistent inside of a consistency, you see, and still call it a time base. But Joe, he's steady. At 6 o'clock on the exact button, every day of every working day and on Sunday, Joe is up. He has never been late for work. Never. He is home at an exact time. He says the same thing when he comes in the door. And you could say, well, there's enough provocation here and enough lack of adventure for this girl never to touch a thing. But we would suppose that she had made a consideration not to cooperate. And the ability to cooperate is actually not within her power because she is being reactively controlled by a change of time base. Now, you as an auditor start to patch up a marriage. And in 90% of the marriages you run into, that is all that is wrong with the marriage. And it's wrong twice. It's wrong with the husband, it's wrong with the wife. Okay? Different speeds. You'll find that two college-trained people will ordinarily get along better than when one is college-trained and the other is not college-trained. Therefore, you would expect to find college-trained people staying together more amicably in a married state than otherwise, and so the figures do work out. So much so that today about the only stable marriages there are around are amongst university people. I mean, these are pretty darn stable marriages compared to the rest of the marriages. You have to have basic comparison. For instance, it's an oddity that whereas 20 years ago there was nobody really who went through a university that had any children. And there's a great deal of talk about the educated woman is breeding herself out of the race and, you know, all kinds of yap-yap. It wasn't the propaganda that did it. It's the fact that co-education caught up with marriage. See? So they were both more or less educated. And now, great oddity. We used to look at the laborer to have the most children, you know. He should have 15 or 20 people, you know, around the house. Should be jam full. And we find out that there's 2, 3, 4 kids in these college marriages quite routinely and ordinarily. And they're not breeding themselves out of the race anymore. Well, we've got a consistency of time base going here. That's all. See? And this consistency then results in a new time system without too violent a shift, because they can arrive at a new base that is satisfactory to both of them, you see. But they can still have wild maladjustments in this and still get along somehow. But they won't get along well. And the funny part of it is, the place it shows up is their ability to cooperate with each other and the amount of arguments they have, of course. Arguments in the home equal change of time base in the marriage for one or the other marital partners. Method of resolution, practice in spotting separatenesses. Got it? And I think in your working with your fellow man, you will find that is really something to know. It is extremely workable. But you'd never expect an innocent little process like separateness to do very much. But that is what it is working at, and why it has the power and beef which it has. Thank you.